the fourth and inches. Oh, God. It's the fourth and inches.
Hello and welcome to the Fourth and Inches podcast, looking back at week 5 in the NFL. I am your host, Ben Rolfe, and you can find me at brolfe1507 on Twitter. With me today, we have our regular main man and very proud Indianapolis Colts fan, Ollie Dawes.
Hi, you can find me on Twitter at Ollie Dawes or at Second City Fanatics.
Alongside him, we have our Atlanta Falcons fan and Second City Fanatics writer, Grant Harrison.
Hello, you can find me on Twitter at GrantHarrison91.
In a week that we lost one of the remaining unbeaten teams in the NFL, the headlines were dominated by the Indianapolis Colts, rising from the ashes to beat the Green Bay Packers 30-27 in an emotional atmosphere at Lucas Oil Stadium, with players, coaches and fans alike supporting one message, Chuck Strong. The game was dominated on the Colts side by two players, Andrew Luck, who threw for 362 yards and two touchdowns, and Reggie Wayne, who had 212 yards on 13 receptions and a touchdown with 35 seconds left to put them ahead. The Packers did have a chance to get back into the game, but Crosby missed a 51-yard field goal to force overtime with 3 seconds to go in the game. Reggie Wayne is now number 2 overall on the Colts' career list for yards from scrimmage. Ollie, what did you make of the game?
The first half was just dreadful. I mean, they just couldn't cope with the Packers' offense and couldn't get anything going against them. Second half, everything changed. I mean, they started getting at Rodgers and putting him under pressure, which in part forced the interception for Jarrell Powers. But Luck started to move the ball and the protection was so much better in the second half. And yeah, in the end, it was still a bit of a nail-biting win because I was sure Crosby was going to make the field goal and send it to overtime. And then the Packers would sort of get the momentum of taking it that far. So it was good to tie it up inside the fourth quarter.
Yeah, the Packers actually were leading 21-3 at the half, but they did lose Cedric Benson and their backup running back had to come in. How crucial was that for the defense for the Colts?
Yeah, they lost Benson and Jermichael Finley as well, I think. It's not like the Colts defense is some sort of juggernaut though. And Alex Green did. There was about 140-yard run, and he was more than serviceable. I don't know what to put it down to, because I don't think Arians has actually said that they made any particular adjustments at half-time. I just think they came out and did what they were doing in the first half, but better.
I'd love to hear what was said in the dressing room at half-time, because I imagine that had a big part as to how the game turned around.
Yeah, there was on the Colts Authority podcast, there was a woman that rang in saying that they might have shown some sort of message from Pagano at halftime. I mean, it's completely unfounded, but the way they came out in the second half, you wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it also wouldn't shock me if someone like Reggie Wayne stood up and read them the riot act.
Yeah, definitely.
He's long-time friends with Pagano. So, but for Green Bay, they didn't have Greg Jennings, and their receiving game really seemed to miss him. No one had more than 4 receptions, and usually, even though they spread the ball around a lot, somebody dominates, don't they, Grant? Somebody sees a lot of the play.
Yeah, if I was a Packers fan, I think it's time to worry, really, about their offense. I mean, if you look at the stat line, Rodgers looked like he had a good game with 235 yards and 3 touchdowns, but the throws he missed, he was really off on. And with Jennings out, no one stepped up to like take that mantle on. I mean, James Jones has been doing well getting the touchdowns, but that's through more circumstance rather than his own play, if you know what I mean. And Jordy Nelson's been non-existent this year as well. So I think the passing game for Green Bay is really, really struggling at the minute. And without the threat of Benson out of the backfield, it's going to be difficult for them to find the form that they had last year.
Yeah, they've got the Texans this week, and their running game's already struggling. Like Green, he had that 41-yard run. But other than that, you had 9 carries for only about 22 yards, which is not really good enough. The Colts defense is not great against the run. It's decent, but it's not great. I think they've got to get Randall Cobb involved more at the background. He's such an explosive player, don't you think, Ollie?
Yeah, I read a stat this week saying that Rodgers has got a perfect QB rating when throwing to Cobb. I mean, on returns, he was pretty good against us as well. But yeah, I think they should start involving him a little bit more.
Yeah, at the backfield, like Cobb can run the ball quite effectively. I mean, when he was at Kentucky, they had a package for him called the Wild Cobb, and he was very effective out of that. And when they put him in the backfield against Chicago on the Thursday Night Football, he had a really nice run out of there. So if you can run against the Bears, I'm sure you could have done a bit of damage against the Colts.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if Greg Jennings comes back this week, and he probably won't catch a lot of the balls, but I think they'll use him as a decoy and they'll throw him a couple of short passes just to keep the defense interested in him, because the Texans will lean heavily on him if he's there, because he's still the number one there. He's still the best receiver, which hopefully will open up Jordy Nelson, who seems to struggle every time he's the number one receiver. And with Jermichael Finley out, I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse, because Rodgers throws a lot of balls to him that he drops, and that's worrying at the best of times. On the Indianapolis side, Ollie, while Donald Brown was really good this week with 17 carries for 84 yards, he is now injured and out for 3 weeks, isn't he? Can Vic Ballard step up in his place?
I think it's going to be a combination of him and DeLone Carter that they drafted last year. Ballard's looked okay, but not as quick as Brown is. He's more of a sort of... He's got a little bit of pace, but he's more stronger than Brown. I've said on Twitter before that my worry is that Brown's pretty good against... he's pretty good at picking up the blitz, and it gives Luck more time in the pocket. Whereas whenever they've used Ballard to pick up the blitz, he's not been great, and he's looked lost and doesn't seem to know his assignment properly.
Yeah, that is going to be a worry if they can't pick up the blitz. And DeLone Carter, I remember from last year, wasn't very good. So if you're going to be relying on him at times, that's going to be a bit of an issue.
Yeah, he did okay, but I mean, he got benched by Caldwell because he kept fumbling the ball. And if he carries on fumbling, then the problem is that he's not Grigson's draft pick. So he's already behind Ballard and probably Mwelde Moore, actually. So he's got to prove himself now, or he might not get another chance with us.
Yeah, he could get cut, and that might be a death sentence for him in the NFL. If you had to own one of the Indianapolis tight ends, who would it be at the moment? Fleener had more targets, but Allen had the touchdown.
I'd say Dwayne Allen. Fleener is getting better. He improved against Green Bay, but he still lost. He still dropped a couple of catchable balls. Whereas Allen... He's a threat in the red zone, as you saw with his touchdown, and he got one against Minnesota a couple of weeks ago as well. So yeah, I mean, I think he's available in most fantasy leagues, so if you need a tight end matchup base, then maybe Allen would be worth a go, especially with us coming up against Tennessee soon as well, who give up a lot of points to tight end.
Yeah, it'd be well worth getting hold of one of them for that. Or if you can play two tight ends, possibly even both, although I think that'll be a frustrating day if you have both of them. Still sticking on the fantasy side, Aaron Rodgers. You can't really trade him now, can you, Grant? Because he's as low as he's been in 3 years in terms of his fantasy stock. Because even though he's still running for yards, he's not putting up the touchdown numbers to put up big points.
Well, you're certainly not going to get the value you used your pick on for him, because he would have been a top four pick in every league pretty much. And well, he's certainly not performing like one at the minute.
No, and like I keep saying with the Texans this week, it's just going to get harder. J.J. Watt, as he said at the end of the broadcast on Monday Night Football, is you can't throw that ball over my head. I can see some more picks possibly coming for Rodgers this week, and that should worry fantasy owners. I wouldn't be sitting him if I was a fantasy owner, because you can't ever sit Aaron Rodgers, but
no. It's
a beware point. If you're one of them who got him and then drafted, say, a Matt Ryan later on and took a risk on a second quarterback that high, it might be a week to give Matt Ryan a real chance.
Well, against the Raiders, you'd play anyone against the Raiders, but I don't think Rodgers is going to. He's probably going to struggle from a real life football perspective, but fantasy wise, I can still see him putting up some stats against the Texans, because I can see Houston getting out to a 14-point lead perhaps with Foster running the ball. So Rodgers is going to have to throw a lot, because then they're not going to run against the Texans with Alex Green. So
No, and
fantasy-wise, he could still succeed.
He's possibly going to be the running game as well, because with, like you said, with Alex Green, and that will be that will be valuable fantasy points for him if that is the case.
Another thing that might hurt Rodgers is Benson's been a pretty good receiver out of the backfield for the Packers so far, and I don't think Green is that well versed in the passing game, so that's going to be another aspect where Rodgers may struggle.
Well, that's where we maybe see Randall Cobb come in a bit more then and become that receiving back out of the backfield. Before we round up this game, Ollie, is there anything else from the Colts side of the ball that you want to talk about?
Well, you can't help but look at what Reggie Wayne did. I mean, he rolled back the years. I think it was 13 catches for 211 yards. Is that right? It was just catch after catch, especially on the final drive. And especially in the second half, Luck was just fantastic. So, it's... The team's still trying to find their identity, I think, because before they beat Green Bay, they lost to Jacksonville. So it's a young team, and we're expecting a bit of inconsistency. So at least they managed to win that game for Pagano. I think that was the main thing to take away from the game.
Yeah, and as you were saying before the podcast, the next five games on the schedule are relatively soft, and they could feasibly go 7-2 or 6-3. And from that point, well, really, sky's the limit almost for them, because no matter what they do from there, they're going to have succeeded in most people's eyes once they get to 6 or 7 wins.
Yeah, I think Luck can actually take us that far. I mean, he's made people look better than they probably are. I mean, especially people like Donny Avery, who are sort of bounced around between the Rams and the Titans and not really done that much. But because he's looked serviceable, but I don't think he's a real option going forward. But yeah, it's exciting times with Luck at the helm.
Can I just say, I think this Colts team reminds me a bit of the Falcons in 2008 when we drafted Matt Ryan. Like, nobody expected anything out of us, but because of a weak conference, we ended up making the playoffs with 11 wins. I'm not saying the Colts are going to do that, but they could contend with, like, the schedule that Ollie's mentioned, so it's worth watching.
We'll move on to what was penciled in as what would be the game of the week, really. It was a showdown of the ages in terms of quarterbacks, with Tom Brady taking on Peyton Manning in Foxborough. The game probably wasn't as close as people thought it was going to be. The Pats were leading 31-7 with 4 minutes and 42 left in the third quarter. But Manning did lead them back, aided by a fumble by Stephen Ridley, only for McGahee to fumble the ball again, the Patriots recovering on that ball, and that pretty much ended the rally for the Broncos. I mentioned there McGahee's fumble, but the Broncos actually lost 3 fumbles. One of them was he's the most bizarre football player I think I've ever seen with the football, Demaryius Thomas. He fumbled last week against Oakland, running down the sideline trying to switch hands, and this week he did it again when all he had to do was turn around and walk into the end zone when Sterling Moore forced the fumble. Are these turnovers going to cost the Broncos down the line? They obviously didn't cost them last week and cost them this week. What about in the future?
Turnovers are killing the Broncos. I mean, if you look at the games they have lost, turnovers have been a huge issue. And as you said about Demaryius Thomas, he's an incredible talent, but he's leaving so many players on the field just by fumbling the ball and making stupid errors like that. And Willis McGahee, like, he's a veteran now. He shouldn't be missing passes on 4th and 1. And then fumbling in the red zone. If the Broncos want to win the AFC West, they are going to have to limit these turnovers.
Yeah, his dropped pass on the 4th down was just criminal. He would have just walked over the similarly as Thomas would have walked into the end zone that time. He would have just walked over the 1st down marker and got the new set of downs and kept the team moving. And he just dropped the ball. He didn't pay attention to what he was doing. And for someone who's been in the league that long, that's absolute cardinal sin, isn't it, really?
It could lead to Ronnie Hillman getting a bit more playing time. The talk is that he's been a bit better in pass protection in practice, so if McGahee continues to make errors like that, you could see a bit more of Hillman, who I know the Broncos coaches are quite high on.
Yeah, he had 3 carries to Lance Ball's 1 last week. I know that's not exactly significant, but that could be a sign of things to come, that he had more than Ball, who they've sort of leaned on since Moreno stuffed them in the back, seems the same as he always does. But talking about the Patriots, who were very impressive in the no huddle, Brady actually led 4 drives of at least 80 yards for scores, and they had 35 first downs, which is a franchise record. And for the second week running, they ran over 250 yards. These are all stats that many Patriots fans just aren't used to seeing. We're used to the short passing game, but seeing like Stephen Ridley, who ran for 151 yards, Brandon Bolden, who ran for 54, and even Danny Woodhead, 47 yards on 7 carries. It's very impressive, isn't it, Ollie?
Yeah, I mean, we've been used to seeing Brady and the Patriots rely on the passing game and sort of a serviceable running back like Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, but if they now add a rushing attack to that offense, I mean, it's going to be frightening for any defense coming up against them.
Another interesting fact in New England is that now Wes Welker is being involved in the offense. After the first few weeks, everyone's saying how he was being phased out. Is this just because of the way that the Patriots started, Grant? They started 1-2, and Belichick looked around and thought, oh, flip, if we're going to win this division and get a good seeding in the playoffs, I need to get Welker back involved, especially with Hernandez out and Gronkowski limited.
Well, with the short passing game being such a like a big part of the New England offense, it's just foolish to not want to use Wes Welker. I mean, he's under contract for this year. You're paying him all that money now. You may as well use him. He's probably still the best slot receiver in the NFL, as he's proven the past few weeks, putting up all these stats. And having a short passing game like that really complements the power running that the Patriots have decided they want to go with and they're having such success with. So that's obviously a reason for Welker's involvement. Aaron Hernandez's injury as well is probably a big factor in why Welker's been used a bit more.
Yeah, and Julian Edelman to an extent, who last year was on the borderline of being cut if he didn't play cornerback, and now all of a sudden seems to be the Patriots' go-to guy on important downs, which, until he got injured, was just kind of crazy. But Welker, I haven't got the exact quote here, but he said something about Belichick this week, which has not been taken too kindly by all accounts, and could that affect his playing time coming up? Because Belichick does hold grudges, doesn't he?
He does, but you'd like to think he would take it as a joke. Apparently it was said very tongue-in-cheek about sticking it to Bill, but with Belichick you really never know, do you, how he's going to take that?
No, you don't have a clue, and that's part of the worry when you say stuff like that. You remember how he reacted to the best foot forward jokes by Wes Welker before the playoffs. He benched him for the first quarter to the detriment of the team. And sometimes I wonder if Belichick is happy enough to make a point, even if it means the team struggles for a quarter or so.
But, yeah, that makes me worry about Stephen Ridley as well.
Yeah.
With the fumble later on.
He's had 2 fumbles this year, and he had a bit of a... he did a few of them last year as well, and Shane Vereen is now coming back into the game a bit more. And obviously you've got Bolden, who's running strong. One of them could see a lot more playing time, especially if Ridley has an early fumble this week. And fantasy owners need to be a bit worried about that, I think. On the defensive side of the ball, which is where Belichick is really stamped his authority over the years in the NFL, they drafted Tavon Wilson. All the news was about Chandler Jones and Donta Hightower, but Tavon Wilson last week, he got the start for the first time at free safety, and he made 10 tackles in total, 5 of them solo. He's really standing out as a quality rookie for them, isn't he, Ollie?
Yeah, they drafted him in the second round, I think, and everyone, all the draft experts had him as sort of 7th round or undrafted. So I think most people were shocked, but they did need some safety help. Wilson's come in and, like you say, last week, he's made some pretty good tackles, but I think Chandler Jones could be the defensive rookie of the year.
While we're on this game, we should just quickly talk about Peyton Manning. He had 31 completions for 44 attempts, 337 yards and 3 touchdowns. His arm is not as bad as people have been saying it is in the past few weeks, is it, Grant?
Peyton Manning has been the master of the fourth quarter putting up stats this year. If you look at all of his games against the Falcons, the Texans and now the Patriots, so much of his work comes in the fourth quarter. And with him throwing as much as it does show that his arm is better than people give him credit for still. The fact he's able to throw 44 times and put up all those stats still, it's creditable to Manning and how he's been able to recover.
And probably the most important thing of all with all them throws is that he didn't throw an interception, and he's only actually thrown 3 interceptions, of which were all on the Monday night game in Atlanta. And it was almost laughable. At that point, I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God, what exactly have Denver done paying him all this money? But he's shown that that was just a blip, and he even showed that later in the game, that that was just a bad start. He got a bit... confused.
Watching that, it wasn't really throws that were the problem, if you know what I mean. It was more the reads he was making. I mean, Mike Nolan ran like an amoeba defense there. Everyone was walking around all the time, and I think with Manning being out for so long, he wasn't really used to seeing that.
Yeah, I have to say the defense in that game was very impressive, and rightly so. That was what got a lot of the attention on some shows. The other game going into the week that was billed as one of the top games of the week was the Pittsburgh Steelers hosting the Philadelphia Eagles. And this was a very close game from the two interstate rivals, but the Steelers' winning drive of 64 yards took 6 minutes and 33 seconds. After the Eagles took the lead at 14-13, the Steelers drove down the field and kicked the winning field goal in the dying seconds. The real headlines here, though, were once again made by Michael Vick for, again, all the wrong reasons. He fumbled 3 times in the game, one of which was on the actual goal line, and he's now had 4 red zone turnovers, which is the most in the NFL. How terrible is he at the moment, Grant?
He's not Mike Vick of old at all. Like, he's not rushing a lot. So the fact that he's not rushing a lot, that limits the one good thing, like the main thing about his game. He's never been a particularly accurate passer. He can't put touchdown throws, really. So when he's not running around doing a lot, he's more of a hindrance to the offense than anything. I mean, he's never going to be the type of player that diagnoses defenses and isn't good against the blitz. So when it looks like he's aged a lot over the summer. Like, it appears it's really caught up with him. So I can see this being his last year with the Eagles if he doesn't obviously pick up his play in the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think they have got a get out in his contract for the Eagles at the end of this year. But what's really worrying is that last year, when he was struggling, he was using a lot of short passes, and this year he just doesn't seem to be. Whenever I see him, he's trying to wing the ball into Macklin or Jackson, and just he's throwing it too hard at them. Like you said, there's no touch to his passes. He needs to be finding Brent Celek some more, who was a real lifesaver for him at times last year when he was under pressure. He was just dumping the ball over the top to Celek, who was just getting the 5 or 6 yards and making the crucial plays. He's not doing that this year, is he, Ollie?
No, and I think I agree that this is probably going to be his last year. I don't think we'll be renewing his contract. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised to see them roll with Nick Foles at some point in the season, because Vic is just a turnover machine so far this year.
Yeah, so if anyone's got a deep bench in fantasy football, he might be worth picking up there, Nick Foles. So he may see some playing time towards the end of the season when we get in towards the fantasy playoffs. And in this Philadelphia offense, they've got some explosive receivers. If someone can just get the ball in their hands, even if it's just screens to DeSean Jackson, he's a punt returner. He'll make good on screens, you would imagine. And Jeremy Macklin's a great receiver. So they really do need to find a way of just getting the ball into their hands, even if it's just short passes.
Foles will definitely play some snaps this season. Vic is not going to last all 16 games. He's done it once in his career. So Foles will definitely get some time, and if they do decide to roll with Vic in the future, Foles will probably be traded for a second rounder to some poor team, like most Eagles backup quarterbacks that flash a little bit.
That's highly likely. What is going to be even more worrying for Philadelphia Eagles fans is, I know they were behind a lot, but LeSean McCoy, only 16 carries for 53 yards. He only had a 3.3 average yards per carry, but is that due to the fact that he's just not seeing the ball enough, really, for his sort of ability? And he's not really being involved in the passing game either, with only 5 targets. He's their best player by a mile, isn't he?
He's certainly the most talented running back they've got, and probably the best player on offense they have. But it's Andy Reid, isn't it? He doesn't like to run the ball that much. And against a Steelers defense that again lost Polamalu, you've got to attack them. You've got to attack them on the ground, particularly when the passing game's not working. And Vic is such a turnover machine this year.
Yeah, Polamalu left in the first quarter, and having started, him and Harrison both started, and many people thought that was going to be the worrying fact, but it really wasn't in the end. Them two didn't really play a huge part, and with Polamalu leaving, you have to attack that area, really. But we'll talk about Pittsburgh and their offense quickly. They've got Rashad Mendenhall back this week. When I wrote my notes, he'd rushed for 81 yards and a touchdown, but since then that's actually changed, and now he only rushed for 68 yards because the run for a touchdown has now been changed to a forward pass for him and Ben Roethlisberger, which affected over 30,000 fantasy games this week. You imagine seeing your win just peel off the board in fantasy football because of a minor stat change, Grant?
It would be terrible. And I'm not quite sure why it changed. Like, it did seem like it was a lateral pass or a backwards pass even. So it would be pretty gutting to have that happen to you.
So and it wouldn't have affected Mendenhall owners other than in a PPR league where they might have picked up one or two points. That probably wouldn't have had too much effect. But it's a big difference for Roethlisberger because it was 20-odd yards, wasn't it? So it does make a huge difference when that sort of thing happens. And with the touchdown as well, he went from having no touchdowns last week to having one. So, but even though Mendenhall lost them yards on review of the stats, he still had a 5.2 yards per carry. It's pretty good for a guy just coming back, isn't it, Ollie?
Yeah, it seems to be the trend so far this year that running backs coming back off ACLs are actually doing pretty well. I mean, Peterson's done all right, and Jamal Charles is looking explosive, and now we've got Mendenhall, who looks as good as when he got injured. I mean, they've tried to run the ball with Jonathan Dwyer and Isaac Redman and Baron Batch, and it's just not being effective. And getting Mendenhall back is really going to help the chances of making the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. But looking at Pittsburgh's side now from a fantasy point of view, Ben Roethlisberger, he's putting up solid yards, but he's not always getting the touchdowns in games. Either seems to get three or four touchdowns or get nothing. And that's got to be worrying for fantasy owners who would want to see some consistency out of him, hasn't it, Grant?
Well, I think it may be down to the lack of a real red zone option other than Heath Miller. I mean, Wallace, Brown and Sanders are all very, very nice speed receivers. But in the end zone, they don't really have the size to threaten defences. I think it might change, though, with Mendenhall being back and there's an actual proper threat of a running game now. So I think Big Ben's the type of guy you can buy low on at the minute.
Yeah, that's definitely not a bad shout. If you're in need of a running back, if your backup at the moment is someone like Russell Wilson, then it might be worth going out and trying to get hold of Ben Roethlisberger. What would be worrying, for fantasy owners from Pittsburgh, is with Mike Wallace. He had 2 receptions on 8 targets in the Philadelphia game. And we're going to cover it later in the Tennessee game. He only had 2 receptions again, albeit one of them was about an 80-yard touchdown. But he's not seeing many catches, is he? He's seeing a lot of targets, but he's not catching the ball. Is he tradable, or is he someone you've just got to stick with for now?
I think it might be a good time to... Well, I mean, if you look at his touchdown last night, it's probably the best chance you're going to get of trading him while he's hot, you know, because... Like you say, he's not catching that many balls, and the value you get in a trade probably wouldn't be that great. So maybe now is the time to deal him away.
Yeah, and somebody who you might want to chase if you need to get rid of Mike Wallace is actually Heath Miller, who, like you said, he is his red zone threat, Grant. And every time they get down there, and also Big Ben has said he's going to get Heath Miller to the Pro Bowl this year. So Miller might be someone that you want to get your hands on for a plug and play. So, well, we'll move on from that game, which was surprisingly low scoring considering the billing that it had, but with the defences there, you probably could have seen it coming, to a game that most people expected to be a high scoring shootout and due to circumstances ended up not being. It was Atlanta at Washington. Atlanta won the game 24-17, but the real headlines were all about 2 rookie quarterbacks on the Washington side of the ball. RG3 left the game early in the second half while attempting to scramble for the end zone on a 3rd and goal with a concussion. He was removed from the sidelines when he was asked what the score was and what the quarter was, and he couldn't tell them either of that. At that point, Cousins came in, and he threw a 77-yard touchdown pass to Santana Moss, and, well, Twitter kind of exploded with, this guy's better than Andrew Luck or Robert Griffin. But that went away when he was intercepted twice in the final 2 minutes while trying to lead the Redskins back to win or to force overtime after the Falcons had taken the lead. Now, Grant, talking about Atlanta here, it wasn't their finest performance of the season. They were very off sync in the offense. And if it hadn't been for Tony Gonzalez stepping up and really being a big part, they would have really struggled to get the win even more than they did.
Yeah, there were a lot of players left on the field in that game. I mean, when we came out throwing, Ryan was a bit off on most of his passes. I mean, most of them sailed pretty high. So, and that's been something he's been guilty of in the past. So obviously there were worries there. But in the second half, and particularly the fourth quarter, we did step up the passing game a lot. And it helped that Turner was able to get a bit going towards the end, I think purely because the Redskins had been on the field so much on defense. I mean, the amount of snaps, Matt Ryan, for example, threw 52 passes. I mean, that's a lot for any game, but I think it did weaken the Skins defense a lot, made them a bit more susceptible to the run. And obviously, with Jones and White on the outside, Gonzalez is always going to have a bit of space over the middle. And I think that was his second best game of his career, receptions-wise. So it just shows how good he still is.
Yeah, the Skins defense, well, the Atlanta offense was on the field for 37 minutes. So that's always going to wear down a defense and help a running back. But Michael Turner, you mentioned him there. He's really salvaged what many people thought was his career coming to a bit of an end in Atlanta, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think getting arrested for the DUI after the Denver game has like lit a fire underneath him. Because since then, he's been, not brilliant, but he's been a more than serviceable running back. I mean, he even had a touchdown pass against Carolina, first of his career. And he's run with a bit more conviction, like he's been hitting the hole a bit more. But I think it's down to the run blocking getting a bit better as well. I mean, Garrett Reynolds was new as a starter, his second stint as a starter when the season opened. So him being able to like play well from right guard has been a big help for Turner.
Yeah, and that's how I wrote in my Bench Warfare article this week. Since Quiz Rodgers has really been touted as the guy who's about to step in for him, Turner's been brilliant. It's almost what he needed was someone to get behind him. Like you say, like that's almost lit a fire under him as well, that everyone's going, oh, Jaquiz Rodgers is the better running back. And Turner's come out with something to prove, and he's been really good ever since all that talk sort of started, which is around the same time as the DUI, and I think it was kind of linked to that as well. But if he can keep Jaquiz Rodgers behind him, that's not no mean feat. Rodgers is a good running back, isn't he?
Yeah, I think we've got quite a deep backfield, to be honest. I mean, I'm still a big Jason Snelling fan. I think he's a very diverse player. He's never going to break away for big gains, but he's a good receiver out of the backfield. He's a good blocker, and he can run the ball some as well. As you say, Rodgers is obviously very talented as well. I just think it's a matter of the run blocking getting a bit better. Turner himself still having something left in the tank. I mean, he's not been going side to side as much. It's been a lot more north-south running instead of like east-west. A quicker hit in the hole, which was a big problem.
Oh,
yeah. The first couple of weeks.
And he showed his athleticism, really, with that run, like you said, against Carolina. I sort of looked up, and my first instinct when I saw someone taking a screen pass that far was it must have been Jaquiz Rodgers, because that's sort of his side of the game. But when the commentator said Turner, I was like, it's not bad. He looked totally a different running back to what he's looked in the past couple of years. And I hope he keeps doing it, because I quite like him and I think he's a good running back. And I know a lot of people at the start of the season dropped him from their fantasy teams. So I'd imagine he's been a pretty hot pickup on waiver wires in shallower leagues recently. Another thing that will be driving fantasy owners mad with the Atlanta Falcons is the constant flip-flopping of the wide receivers. Some week, Roddy White has 15 catches. But this week, he only had 4 catches. Okay, he still had a respectable 68 yards on them. But Julio Jones this week, 10 receptions, 94 yards and a touchdown. As we were talking about a few seconds ago, Tony Gonzalez has remained the constant in this offense, hasn't he? 123 yards for a touchdown. Are you willing to make a call on who's going to be the better receiver this week for fantasy, Roddy White or Julio Jones?
I think it's safe to start both of them this week, to be honest. I mean, the Raiders are missing their 2 starting cornerbacks. And even with 2 good cornerbacks on the field, it's pick your poison, really. You can't single cover either of them. I mean, Julio's been bothered a bit by the hand injury that he's had, but he's still putting up the stats, apart from, not last week, the week before that. That's the only real dud of a game he's had so far. The only problem with Julio is he does drop a few passes from time to time, so he's the guy that's obviously got the higher ceiling, but Roddy White, this performance against the Skins, 4 for 68, that's probably like his floor. He's always going to have a few receptions, about 70 yards. Roddy White's the safer option, but Julio's the guy that you go for if you wanted to swing for the fences.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout. I imagine having them both on the same team is would drive people mental, because you'd probably have another good receiver on there and you'd have to choose whether to start both of them or just one of them, and probably whoever you start, you get it wrong, which is never fun. But we'll take a quick look at the Washington Redskins. And, well, I said the headlines were made by the quarterbacks, which I think is a little bit unfair, because Alfred Morris, he's had 491 rushing yards in his first five games, and that's the fourth most by a rookie. The last person who had 490 was Adrian Peterson in his rookie year. It's quite an act to follow, isn't it?
I think Alfred Morris has been brilliant so far this year. I mean, I've got him in loads of fantasy leagues everywhere, so I've been following his progress. At the start of the season, people thought Mike Shanahan would flip-flop between the running backs, but I think it's been the case in the past where if he's found one he likes, he does tend to stick to them. And obviously, you can't really question any of Morris's performances so far.
Yeah, and well, everybody, he had 115 yards this week, and everybody's been saying that when he eventually ground to a halt, it would be Evan Royster come in. But when he was taken off the field, albeit for only one snap, that a run was done, Ryan Grant was the guy that came in. Are we seeing what happens here if Alfred Morris gets injured or falls off the cliff a little bit? Is it going to be Ryan Grant, do you think?
Grant isn't as good as he used to be, and that's why the Packers probably let him go, and why no team really showed a big interest in him in free agency. But I think Royce has had a couple of injury problems lately, so if Morris does need to be replaced, it'll probably be Ryan Grant.
Before he got injured for the Packers a couple of years ago, he was their main running back, and he's had a bit of a fall from grace because he was being taken in like first or second round of fantasy drafts a couple of years ago, and then he got injured in about the fourth game, and ever since he's really been nothing to fantasy owners or even to teams. He's just not seen anything of the ball, and Morris is going to hit a wall. Rookies tend to do that at some point, and if they do, I think Ryan Grant is primed to step in. I think it's a good move by Washington to bring him in. But on the receiving side of the ball for Washington, Santana Moss had the most amount of yards, but he had two receptions, of which one was a 77-yard touchdown. So I think we can kind of rule him out of being their main receiver. But Fred Davis only had five receptions, and Pierre Garçon only had three. Are they just missing a receiving threat, Grant?
I think Garçon dropped a few passes in this game, and he's obviously only just come back from the injury, so I still think he'd be their number one, but I don't really see anyone apart from that. I mean, the Moss touchdown was just a completely broken coverage from us. I mean, Thomas Deku came over, and I think there was a misread on like a zone coverage with him and the cornerback. So you obviously can't read anything into Moss's touchdown. But I think Garçon should be all right as long as RG3 does come back. And I didn't think much of Cousins when he came in. The two picks were poor on his part. And as I said, you can write off that touchdown because I'm pretty sure anyone in the league could have made that pass.
Okay, so talking about interceptions, Matt Ryan's interception. I saw it and it was pretty terrible.
It was terrible, but it was a good play from Kerrigan as well to actually catch the ball. I mean, he should have batted it down easily. It was straight at him. But it was a really athletic play from Kerrigan, particularly to take it all the way to the house as well.
Oh, yeah, the catch was good, but should Matt Ryan have not been throwing the ball? Should he have given up on the play and just threw it out over the head of his screen guy and just... He wouldn't have been penalised because it would have been looked as that he'd overthrown the ball. Did he make a mistake trying to force the pass in there?
Yeah, I think that was a mistake on his part, but it's one of like three he's made all season, three picks, so I'll allow him that one.
Yeah, I don't think we can hold that against him.
People say that we like are meant to struggle outside on the road. We've been on the road, all of our road games so far have been outdoors, and we're 3-0 there in like varying climates as well. So it's nice to see that we've been able to like pass the ball outside as well. Like, I mean, Ryan's thrown 345 yards in this game on the road, outdoors. And I know Washington's not the biggest, not the best defense, but to come from behind it as well, it's very encouraging to see.
Yeah, that is a real positive. And the way you're going at the moment, you could have home field advantage. So the whole outdoors thing might not make a difference. You could have home field advantage all the way through the playoffs, and then you're in a dome for the Super Bowl if you get there. So I think this year it could be a non-factor if you keep going the way you're going. And the start you've got is leading you towards that sort of setup. So that's perfect, really. And I think it's a bit of a moot point with Atlanta for people to keep saying that now. I think Okay, so we'll move on from there, because I think that's a perfect place to stop with the Falcons at 5-0 and the Redskins maybe not looking like they're going to be as good as people had them pegged to be after the first week, but we always knew that was probably going to be the case. And we'll move on to the no huddle section of our podcast. We'll review all the games from last week, and also as a little added bonus, because we're recording this podcast quite late in the week, we'll also look at the Thursday night game from, well, as the time of recording last night. But the first game was, well, last week's Thursday night game, and it was the Rams hosting the Cardinals. The Rams won the game 17-3. But Sam Bradford, in a winning effort, completed 7 passes. What did you guys think of this game?
Right, this was a very, very bad game of football. I think there was a time when it was like 17 passes in a row were incomplete between Bradford and Cobb. And I think that tells you all you need to know about the quality of the offences on display. I mean, there was a point where Kevin Cobb was... He had people in his face pretty much every single play. Robert Quinn and Chris Long were excellent for the Rams. And it just meant the Cardinals had like no time to do anything offensively. So I think it exposed the Cardinals a little bit. I mean, the 4-0 start was a bit of a false dawn, in my opinion, when Kevin Cobb is the quarterback and they're getting nothing from the running game. I mean, Ryan Williams went out for the season after this, after a brutal, brutal hit. I mean, with William Powell and LaRod Stevens Howling as their primary running backs now, I can see the Cardinals struggling to get anything going offensively for the rest of the year.
Yeah, they rely very heavily on their defense. And it's the same with St. Louis. They rely heavily on their defense. They had 9 sacks this week, and Kevin Cobb threw the ball 50 times. It wasn't a great game, and I think we should just move on to the next game, which was the Miami Dolphins against the Cincinnati Bengals. The Dolphins pulled out a 17-13 victory, with Ryan Tannehill showing flashes of, as many people have said this week, being an elite quarterback. What did you think of the game, Ollie?
Well, like you say, Tannehill's... I think he's come in and done a lot better than what people were expecting. I think they thought he'd be inexperienced and maybe go down the same path as Blaine Gabbert has been thrown in at the deep end. But Tannehill's taking it in his stride and he looks good under pressure. You just wonder what he could do if you had a real number one receiver instead of, you know, Brian Hartline.
Yeah, Hartline's been good this year. He was the lead again this game with 4 receptions and 59 yards, but you are right, whereas on the other side there was AJ Green, who had 9 receptions, 65 yards and a touchdown. The game was really won by the Miami defense, exactly the same as the last game was. It was a game of defense and the Dolphins came out on top. Once again, it wasn't a great game, but it was a tense game, and for once the Dolphins came out in a close game, and that's what the Dolphins fans have been waiting to see. So, and we'll move on now to our third low-scoring game in a row. It was the Ravens at the Chiefs. It was a field goal fest that was won 9-6 by the Ravens. But the main point that really came out of this was the Chiefs fans cheering when Matt Cassell was down on the field injured, because it meant he would leave the game. Now, what did you make of that, Grant?
I think it's terrible that, like... I mean, obviously, Matt Cassell's not played very well at all this year for the Chiefs, and he is one of the main problems with that team. But you can't cheer when someone gets concussed, which is what happened to him. And I think Eric Winston said it best after the game when he said he was sickened by the fans. And when one of your own players is calling out the fans, I think it says a lot about just how poorly the fans did behave. And the thing is that they're cheering because Brady Quinn is going to come into the game. Brady Quinn is not good. He is not going to make the Chiefs a contender. So it's just brain dead from the fans on both a moral level and a football level.
Yeah, they did actually come out this week and say that like people came out and said, we weren't cheering because Cassell was injured. We were cheering because we wanted Brady Quinn in the game. And people just turned around and said, that's not better. So probably a headline on the field rather than the cheering in the stands was Jamal Charles had 100 rushing yards in the first half. Now, he only had 30 or 40 in the second half, which was what the problem was in the second half. But it was a real run-dominated game with field goals. It was a game for the purists, shall we say. And I think we should leave that game with the purists and go on to a slightly more explosive game in the Browns at the Giants. The Browns took an early lead, up 14-0, with a 62-yard pass from Brandon Whedon, but the Giants came back to win the game 41-27. So then, Ollie, did the Giants do well to come back, or did the Browns throw it away?
I think it was a combination of the two. I mean, the Browns just couldn't stop Ahmad Bradshaw, who ran all over them all day long. And I mean, I think we've all seen the Brandon Whedon incident where he tries to throw the ball and it bounces off another player back into his hands, and he tries to throw another pass, which obviously you can't do. And it was just, it was a hilarious play and pretty much sums up Whedon's season so far.
Yeah, it wasn't a great moment for Whedon, but it was nice to see Josh Gordon stepping up. He had 2 touchdowns in this game. And Victor Cruz, he had 5 receptions, 3 of which were touchdowns. It's pretty impressive, to be honest. And as you mentioned, Amar Bradshaw, 200-yard game. Amar Bradshaw owners don't expect that this week. He's playing the San Francisco 49ers.
I quite like the Browns. Like, I think they're getting a lot of stick, but there is hope for the fans of that team. So Browns fans out there, don't be too down on them. They're just very inexperienced.
Yeah, if Brandon Whedon can get some experience and start playing like the quarterback he showed he was in college, they've got a really young team and some explosive receivers. But what's going to be worrying, or what's worrying when you look at the Browns, is that their best fantasy player was Josh Cribbs, who got all his yards in return yards. That's worrying on that front. So, but yeah, we'll move on from that game. And once again, the New York Giants come from behind. I think they've made a career out of that. And we'll go to the Seahawks, who faced off against the Panthers. The Seahawks won the game 16-12, sticking the Panthers in a bit of a hole at 1-4 this year. You're an NFC South fan, Grant, so what do you make of the Panthers both in this game and overall?
Well, I think I've been stitched up here. I've been given the 3 worst games of the week. But but no, the Panthers are a team that, if I was a fan of theirs, I'd be very concerned about. I mean, I mentioned in our preview of the NFC South that I thought Cam Newton would regress this year, but I didn't imagine he would regress this far. I mean, sadly, the one good game he's had was against Atlanta, but he just looked terrible in this game. I mean, if you look at the stats, it's a terrible performance, but if you actually watch the game happen, like the misses he was making on some of his throws were astounding, like how far off he was. And it's just, it's startling to see a player regress that much. I mean, I know the Seahawks are an incredible defense. I mean, they're probably my favourite defence to watch in the NFL with how they get after the quarterback and just how physical they are. But for a first overall pick and the hope for Carolina, you've got to expect more out of him.
Yeah, what's got to be really worrying for Carolina is that 9 of their points came off their defence, with 2 of them being an intentional safety by the Seattle punter, who, to avoid a blocked kick in the last minute, ran out of the back of the end zone in order to, in order to not have a block kick and to pin the Carolina back as far as he could. So it's going to be quite worrying for Carolina. But on the Seattle side, they'll be pleased because Russell Wilson, he may have thrown 2 interceptions, but he had 221 yards with 19 completions and a touchdown. And this week he's facing the Patriots, who have not got the best secondary. So it might be that he and his receivers are in for a decent week. And Sidney Rice could be a good start in fantasy football this week. And I'm sorry, Grant, I think you have been stitched up because they were 3 terrible games, but it was just the way it fell. So we'll move on from that game to the Bears at the Jaguars. Now, I don't know, but I don't think this was a much better game. The Bears won it 41-3, scoring 38 points in the second half. First half was pretty diabolical, Ollie, wasn't it? But the Bears showed their class in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, eventually it took a while for them to get going, but the defense just scores touchdowns. I mean, it's sort of Tillman, Jennings, Briggs, they're all making plays and interceptions and putting points on the board. But Jacksonville are just not a good team at the moment. They can't get Justin Blackmon into the game, and Gabbert's showed very little improvement from his rookie year. So there's tough times ahead for the Jaguars.
Yeah, I'll not talk about the Jaguars now because I think everybody talks about how bad they are. But Chicago will be really pleased with, even though that was a bit of a blowout win, Brandon Marshall and Matt Forte, their 2 standout players, came to play, with Matt Forte having 107 yards on the ground and Marshall having 144 yards and a touchdown in the air. But like you said, the defense is the real standout. They collected a reception and 2 interceptions that both went for touchdowns. Their defense is possibly better than their offense at the moment in terms of putting points on the board, and that's saying something. So we'll move from a very terrible AFC South team in the Jaguars to a slightly less terrible AFC South team in the Tennessee Titans, who were comprehensively beaten by the Vikings 30-7 with Percy Harvin at 108 yards in the air and a touchdown. But Adrian Peterson once again, 88 yards, and Toby Gerhardt had 41 yards. They're not slowing down, are they, Grant? They're a lot better than we thought they were.
No, the Vikings are the surprise team of the season for me. I've been very, very impressed with them, particularly like Ponder and his and the passing game. I mean, Percy Harvin would get MVP votes for me for just what he does in all facets. He's a wonderful receiver. He's decent out of the backfield, and he's obviously like an all-pro kick returner. Having that type of weapon on your team is only going to help a young quarterback. And Kyle Rudolph's been very good from the tight end spot as well. So I think the Vikings offensively have been superb, particularly for a team that was so unheralded coming into the year.
Yeah, and Kyle Rudolph Day was salvaged a little bit like wise with a late touchdown. But he was good. And Kendall Wright on the Tennessee side, he had 9 receptions for 66 yards. Again, we'll talk about Tennessee once again in a second when we cover the Thursday night game this week. In a week that was full of blowouts, we'll talk about another one with the 49ers thrashing the Bills 45-3 at home, with probably the headline stat being that San Francisco's trebled the amount of yards in the game that Buffalo got, getting 621 yards, of which 310 were on the ground. Ollie, is it just Buffalo are really bad, or are San Francisco just really good?
I mean, Buffalo, they paid so much money to Mario Williams and Mark Anderson, and they spent a high draft pick on Marcel Darius last year and Stephon Gilmore this year, and the defense is almost, it's like it's got worse. I mean, they can't stop anyone at the moment. Because the 49ers, whilst the offense has got better, they're not exactly explosive. But they were just absolutely all over them. And again, the 49ers stopped the run brilliantly as Jackson and Spiller barely got anything going.
Yeah, it's hard to read much into this game in terms of fantasy-wise, because Jackson and Spiller were truly terrible, but they were up against an absolutely brilliant defense and they were behind from early on. And with San Francisco's eye, Kendall Hunter saw 11 carries compared to Frank Gore's 14, but I think that was just because they didn't want to put Frank Gore at risk by leaving him out there. So it's a hard one to call, but the interesting thing for San Fran is that Colin Kaepernick is seeing more and more plays, it seems, each week in this it's almost a semi-wildcat, but if I call it a wildcat, I imagine I'll get lynched by most people because it's not quite one, but he runs it really well. And I mentioned last week he out-Tebowed the Tebow, and him and Alex Smith are almost a perfect combination. Smith threw for 303 yards this week, and Kaepernick ran for 39 yards and a touchdown. Now, I don't think you'll hear me describe Alex Smith as perfect for the rest of the season, but it's not a bad setup they've got there at all. So that game rounds up the last of the Sunday afternoon games, and we'll move on to the Sunday night game, which was between the San Diego Chargers and the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans registered their first win of the year, putting three teams in that division on only one win, chasing the Falcons, who so far are 5-0. But it was a positive for the Saints. Marcus Colston had 3 touchdown receptions. What did you make of it, Grant?
It's obviously a nice win for the Saints to get the first win on the board. And Colston was outstanding, but I wasn't quite sure why the Chargers decided to leave him so poorly covered for most of the game. I was watching it. It was just very frustrating to see. Because he's like Jimmy Graham's ankle gimped like it was. Colston's the main receiving threat for the Saints, so I was just baffled as to why they didn't roll more coverage his way. But in the overall scheme of things, I thought the Chargers were going to tie it up when Antonio Gates got probably the worst offensive pass interference penalty I've ever seen given against him. It was terrible. I don't know if you saw it, but I was just tearing my hair out watching it. It was that bad. No bias against the Saints there.
Well, yeah, I was going to take that out and just say it just shows that even now we've got the regular F back, we still get mistakes. So some positives, though, in the game. San Diego, Ryan Matthews, 12 carries, 80 yards and a touchdown. Ryan Matthews fans, breathe again. He is back and he is
he
running this
awesome
offense. And he will probably start this week. And, yeah, he did. He looked awesome. But the real headline of the week is Drew Brees, who broke Johnny Unitas' record for the most games, consecutive games with a touchdown pass. And I think I stood up and cheered when he did that. Drew Brees wasn't at fault for what happened in New Orleans, and you can't help but still love the guy. I think he's a great quarterback, and well done. It's a fantastic record for a fantastic quarterback. We'll move on from the Sunday night game to the Monday night game, which was a lot closer than most people thought it was. The Texans just overcame the Jets 23-17 in the MetLife Stadium. But, Ollie, it was a good game, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, the Jets kept it fairly close. I think much closer than we expected. But you've got to remember that one of the touchdowns was on special teams from Joe McKnight's incredible return touchdown. The Texans, I think the main thing that's come out of the game is that Brian Cushing got injured and is now out for the rest of the season. That's a huge blow to their defense because he's a real leader for them.
Yeah, and actually, Matt Slauson, he's been fined £10,000 for the hit, which shocked a lot of people because they didn't actually think it was that bad. So you'll probably see that one develop if he appeals it and might hear some more about that. But a real positive for New York would be that Jeremy Curley stepped up in the absence of Santonio Holmes with 5 receptions for 94 yards. Yeah, and another positive will be tight end Jeff Cumberland, who stepped up with 2 receptions, 51 yards and a touchdown. He seems to get the odd touchdown here and there, and that'll be good for the Jets in the absence of Dustin Keller. Houston, on the other hand, Arian Foster did what Arian Foster does. He had more carries because Ben Tate wasn't there, and he got 152 yards and a touchdown. And at one point, I didn't think the Jets were ever going to stop him. Every time he got the ball, he seemed to run for 10 or 11 yards. It was ridiculous for a little while there. But what we did see is that not anyone can run behind this offensive line. His Forsett really struggled, and Houston will want to get Tate back to get that 1-2 punch back working the way it was before he went out. So, well, that pretty much rounds up the Week 5 games. Of course, the Cowboys, the Lions, the Raiders and the Buccaneers were on a bye. So we obviously haven't talked about them today. Just before I talk about the Pittsburgh game, Beano Cook has passed away in his sleep this week. And he was an absolute legend in the world of college football. Not so much in NFL, but he went to the University of Pittsburgh and he was a big commentator on college football for many years, and he's been very much involved in an ESPN college football podcast, and he will be sorely missed by everyone who listened to any of his commentary or any of his analysis, because he was an absolutely great bloke who knew his sport, and the city of Pittsburgh will be a lesser place for not having him anymore. Which directly actually linked me into the Thursday night game, because the Pittsburgh Steelers played this week against the Tennessee Titans, and it was won on a last-second field goal by Rob Baronis, who got the chance to kick it after Sean Swisham of the Steelers missed a 54-yarder. What did you make of the game?
Well, it was a bit of a shock. I don't think many people saw the Titans winning this one, but they kept pace with them quite well. There's still some issues on the Titans' defense because some of the tackling was just atrocious. I mean, there was one play by Isaac Redmond where he gained about 5 or 10 yards, having already been, well, someone tried to tackle him, but it was just a half-hearted effort. Chris Johnson bounced back a little bit. He was making people miss, which I think is one of the things that he's not been doing this year. He's just been sort of relying on everyone to make holes for him instead of making defenders miss. So I think that'll be a big plus for the Titans going forward.
Yeah, he looked good on his cuts and stuff this week, but on the rushing game, that was a bit more of a worry for Pittsburgh. Rashad Mendenhall only had 6 yards on 6 carries. Baron Batch only had 22 yards. And Isaac Redmond was the leading receiver with 105 yards, with Mike Wallace only catching 2 balls, one of them being an 82-yard touchdown. And once again, their leading receiver was, well, leading receiver in terms of their tight ends and wide receivers was Heath Miller, which is not what you want to see if you're a Pittsburgh player. You've got 3 explosive receivers there. That is not what they will want to happen.
No, they don't look like the same team from last year. They've regressed a little bit, the Steelers, and they'll probably still make the playoffs because the AFC is so weak, but they've got a lot of problems.
That was what I was going to ask you, actually. Will they make the playoffs? And I think they might they'll get a wild card now. I think the Ravens are going to get the North, but it's only going to be because that conference is so weak. And the way it's going, you could even see somebody like the Miami Dolphins challenging, and the Indianapolis Colts, we were talking about that earlier, challenging for the playoffs at the end of the season. And really, if you were to put them in the NFC, they'd be nowhere near. And that's part of the problem in the AFC, really. So, well, that was an added bonus for you, like I said, because we've rounded up so late in the week because we had some circumstances a little bit beyond our control on Wednesday. And now we will preview our four main games of the week. The first of these is Dallas at the Baltimore Ravens. How do you see this one going, Grant?
Dallas at Baltimore. With Joe Flacco being at home, I could think you'll see a much different Ravens side than when they're on the road. I mean, he struggled this last week in Kansas City, but I think the Dallas defense was somewhat exposed against the Bears. And with the Ravens defense being an awesome pass D still, I mean, they're obviously struggling against the run. I can see Tony Romo struggling against the Ravens to get anything going. So I can see the Ravens winning this. It's going to be a tight one, though, because they're both good squads, both solid teams.
Yeah, I'm not high on Torrey Smith for the Ravens this week. I think the Ravens will win it, but I think Torrey Smith is going to be covered by Brandon Carr this week, or if not, Maurice Claiborne, who's been very good. And with the rush defense of Dallas, I can't see him getting much time to throw the ball. But then I could also see the same for Tony Romo. I can see another multiple interception day, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on him in Dallas the way things are going at the moment. So I think the Ravens are going to win. What do you think, Ollie?
Yeah, I'll back the Ravens because, like, a bit like Michael Vick, Romo has just become a bit of a turnover machine, particularly against the Bears. Wasn't all on him. His receivers let him down occasionally. But, yeah, I think you've got to fancy Baltimore in this one.
Yeah, very much. The NFC East is there for someone to win if they actually want to, because it doesn't seem like anyone's trying to win it as it stands. Our next game is, well, another NFC East team. It's the Giants at the 49ers, which is a repeat of last year's NFC Championship game, which, as you will remember, ended in the most heartbreaking way for the 49ers. Ollie, how do you see this one turning out? Will it be a repeat of last year, or are the 49ers going to win it?
I think I'll back the 49ers in this one. Last week, the Giants relied a lot on Ahmad Bradshaw, and the 49ers, no one can run on them. I mean, they're just experts at stopping the run. I think the key for the Giants is going to be trying to expose, like, Carlos Rogers and the 49ers secondary. It sounds like Hickey Nicks is going to miss the game again, though, so it means a lot of it will be put on Victor Cruz's shoulders.
Yeah, that is the problem. Victor Cruz is not a great number one. He's a fantastic number two, like above average number two. He's a one and a half, almost, you'd say. But you could see Dominic Hixon and Martellus Bennett have good days if the defense focuses on Ahmad Bradshaw and Victor Cruz. But I'm going to go with the 49ers, especially at home. What do you think, Grant?
I'm going with the Giants. I think they'll have enough defensively to be able to force Alex Smith to do more than he's comfortable with. I'm still not a Smith believer, to be honest. I mean, I know they've been good against the Jets and the Bills, but it's the Jets and the Bills, so...
No, I do feel it's a matter of time now until we see Colin Kaepernick have a real grip on this offense, where he's running not just a few plays, but getting close to like a third of the plays.
Yeah.
That setup. And if he shows that he can pass the ball, which he hasn't a couple of times, he's thrown into a bit of coverage, then it may even creep up towards half the plays, because it's an effective offense if you can run it right, and he seems like the perfect guy to run it at the moment.
I thought Kaepernick was going to get a few more plays last week, but I think when he fumbled early on in the game, I think it might have tempered the coach's thoughts towards him a little bit.
Yeah, I think Harbaugh said, right, that'll do for now, and just sat him down and said, not this week, mate, sort of thing. I think it was for him as much as anyone else. We'll move on and look at the Sunday night football game, which has all the makings of being the best game of the week. It's the Green Bay Packers at Houston Texans. It's a game where you've got an explosive offense on one side who's not been able to click against an absolute superb defense. And who do you think comes out on top, Grant?
I can see the Packers doing it somehow. I think it's desperation mode for them now. They can't go to 2-4 if they realistically want to be challenging at the top of the NFC North. So I can see the Packers pulling it out purely out of desperation. I mean, they still have a lot of talent on offense, and with Greg Jennings potentially coming back into the lineup, I can see them being able to do something against that Houston defense. And I'm yet to be convinced about Matt Schaub as well as like a truly game-winning elite quarterback. I mean, he's obviously a very good player, but there's still question marks there over whether he can drive a team himself.
Yeah, and with the Texans being 5-0 at the moment, there is this case where they could slip up this week and it won't affect them too much. And whether or not that comes into it, that the Packers just want it more because, like you said, they can't go 2-4. But I still see the Texans winning it. I just don't see the Packers clicking this week against this defense. And until they click, they've got a real problem. What do you think, Ollie?
Having seen how much pressure the Colts put on the Packers' offensive line, you've got to worry that the Texans are going to absolutely dominate them. And like Grant says, the Packers are in desperation mode now. Going 2-4 would be a huge blow. And I mean, this could be the game of the week. You've got one offense that's really looking to prove themselves after a bit of a stuttering start against the joint best defense in the league. I'm still going to back the Texans though, but I mean, this could go either way.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game. That's quite safe to say. And with the Bears on bye this week, they could sit back and potentially watch them and the Vikings get a better grip on this division if the Lions and the Packers fail again. So, but we'll take a quick look at the Monday night football game, which of course is shown on BBC. And it's the Broncos at the Chargers. Now, it's a great AFC West clash. Can Peyton Manning do it and really kickstart the Broncos, who have had a so-so start to the season? Ollie?
Yeah, I think the Broncos will win this one. The Chargers became the first team this season to lose to the Saints, so they've obviously got problems. Rivers, I think he did okay on Sunday, but he's still been a bit hit and miss so far. I think the Broncos are going to edge this one.
Yeah, Manning played really well last week, even in the loss. And San Diego are known to start slowly, and they haven't. So you have to wonder if that's going to kick in at some point, don't you, Grant?
You do. I think this is going to be the game of the week, to be honest. I usually struggle to stay up for Monday Night Football, but I'll certainly be watching this one. I've seen both of these teams this year, obviously with the Falcons going against them. I think it's going to be a really entertaining game. Prediction-wise, I think the Chargers will have enough. I mean, after how Denver got absolutely destroyed on the ground against the Patriots, I think Ryan Matthews could be in for a big day if North decides to stop being stupid and actually give their best running back the ball.
Yeah, but I'm going to go with the Chargers in this one. I think you're right. Ryan Matthews is going to be the key.
I think if you were going to gamble in this game, I'd definitely take the over. It's going to be an absolute shootout, in my opinion. Both defenses aren't that good. So
yeah, and it could, if it turns into a shootout, it could be a game where we see Philip Rivers throwing a couple of picks, as he is prone to in some of these big games, and has earned him the tag of not quite being one of them elite quarterbacks. But of course, this week we once again have four teams on a bye week. We have the Chicago Bears, the New Orleans Saints, the Carolina Panthers, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're going to miss the Bears playing this week, but I don't think we'll miss the other three as it stands. So get any of their players out of your fantasy lineups. And look, and if you're a fan of them teams, you can have a week just enjoying the NFL. We will
the
go
one week of the year, Jags fans.
Yeah, the one week of the year for the Jags fans, as you say, who we are very much looking forward to seeing against the San Francisco 49ers next year at Wembley, with that having been announced this week, and hopefully that Jacksonville Jaguars will have drafted some better players and will look a better team, and it won't be a walkover like everyone thinks it will be at the moment. We will move on to our two-minute warning section of our podcast, and the question today, guys, is, at this point in the season, who is your MVP? I know what you're going to say, Ollie, so I'll start with you, Grant.
I think mine's pretty predictable as well. I'm going to go with Matt Ryan. I've written an article on Second City about it last week. And even after the Washington game, where it was probably his worst game of the season, he still engineered a game-winning drive, threw for 350 yards, and quite frankly, he's just been awesome this year. if the calls for him as being MVP aren't big enough yet, after Sunday's game against a terrible Oakland secondary, he should be the clear leader going into the Falcons bye week.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I was torn between two people this. One of them is JJ Watt, but with Arian Foster on the offense for the Texans, I don't feel like JJ Watt is the absolute difference. And then where I do feel there is a player making an absolute difference, though, is in Minnesota with Percy Harvin. He just does everything. He is the most complete player in the NFL. He can return kicks, he can rush the ball, he can receive the ball, and I'm fairly sure at some point this season we are probably going to see him throw the ball. He is just that good, and I think as it stands, he would be in with a shout. He may just miss out to Matt Ryan, but he'd definitely, definitely be up there.
Total homer pick, Reggie Wayne. I mean, he's on for an unbelievable year, and he's 34 next month. Some of the catches he's been making so far have just been unbelievable. I mean, he's the best receiver on this team by a country mile, and hopefully there's some way that he does make it to play all the 3 years of his contract.
Yeah, you do have to feel that Reggie Wayne deserves a lot of respect this year, because he could have jumped ship and gone anywhere in free agency, but he came back, and as well as being a leader on the field, I get the feeling from what I've heard that he's also been a leader off the field, and that's a very commendable thing for someone in such a young team. So, I think as it would stand, the rankings on them would be Matt Ryan would be number one, Percy Harvin number two, and probably Reggie Wayne number three if it was put to the vote around across the NFL right now. But I agree with what you're saying, Ollie. Okay, well, that pretty much brings us to the end of our podcast today, guys. Grant, thank you very much for joining us, and where can we find you?
As I said at the start, you can find me on Twitter at GrantHarrison91 and our Right Weekly for Second City Fanatics. Should have something up before Sunday's game.
And Ollie, where can we find you?
Either at Ollie Dawes or at Second City Fanatics, and obviously I write for Second City Fanatics as well.
You can find me at BRolf1507 on Twitter, or more commonly at 1AM Sports, which is where I do most of my tweeting, not just about the NFL, but about the MLB. And once the NBA and NHL comes back, of course, we will have as much of that as we can get on there. We also have some college football coverage over there. You can also follow us here at the podcast. We are at 4thandinchespod on Twitter. And you can also email us at 4thandinchespodcast@gmail.com. We're looking forward to another great week in the NFL, as I'm sure all of you are. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye. It's all over.